Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to another episode of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, with your host, Caroline Foran, recording from home still because we are still in bloody lockdown. And as much as I would love to be meeting my guests face to face, I will have to put up with Zoom in the meantime. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the series so far. For this one, I'm so excited about this episode. I was lucky enough to get time with Ethan Cross. You might not have heard of his name, but he is a world-renowned scientist. He is an amazing storyteller, and his new book is called Chatter, and it's about the voice in our head, and that's what he calls it. So for me, we could probably liken anxiety a lot to chatter, rumination, and thinking and worrying about the future and, you know, ruminating on the past. And he looks at this voice in our head where we spend a massive proportion of our waking life in, and how to harness it. So what is chatter? Why do we do it? Where does it come from? How can we harness it? How can we bring down our anxiety? The power of our thoughts sometimes is something I also ask him about. He just explains it so well, even though he's so massively qualified in science, he doesn't really get lost in the jargon, which is just amazing because it means that you can just take what he's saying and apply it straight away. He's an award-winning psychologist, one of the world's leading experts on controlling the conscious mind, and he's going to help you harness the conversations that you have with yourself. So do enjoy. Ethan Cross, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. I'm so thrilled to get this time with you. From what I've read of your book so far, you get it. And not only do you get it, you're also incredibly qualified and you have so many letters after your name to validate everything you're saying. So I'm delighted to talk to you.
It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to it.
Thank you. Congratulations on the launch of Chatter. I was just telling you there before we started recording that I'm in the middle of sleep training my baby. So I would love to tell you that I've finished it, but it's only a luxury I'm now getting to reading that book without being interrupted by screaming crying. So
No worries. I fully remember what that time was like, and it is not for the faint of heart.
No, and I'm sure it does impact the chatter in my head as well as I go through my day. So before we get to talking about the book, I'd love to just ask you a little bit about your background, what you do, your job and your work.
Sure. So I'm a professor in the psychology department and also in the Ross School of Business here at the University of Michigan. I've been here for about 12 years and I run a lab called the University of Michigan Self-Control and Emotion Laboratory. And we basically do all sorts of different kinds of research to try to understand how we can help people align their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors with their goals. And so the idea is that there are all these different things we want to accomplish in the world, ways of thinking and feeling and doing. And sometimes we have trouble following through with those goals. And so we do studies to figure out how to make that possible. And sometimes it takes us into the brain. Other times it sometimes takes us into schools. into people's relationships. And so it's a really fun place to explore the mind.
I can't imagine a more interesting way to spend your time. I'm just obviously fascinated myself with like understanding more about how we think and why we think and feel the way that we do. But my, I suppose the books that I've written and my podcast and everything is really me sharing my experience and me trying to figure things out as I go. So I'm not here as like an expert or anything. So if we ever come out of this pandemic and I can be in America and come and see what you do in real life, that would be just a dream come true.
Oh, we'd love to have you. We will give you the full tour. That would be a great deal of fun. Hopefully soon. I'm very hopeful that we're approaching the end. So
we have more of it behind us than we do ahead of us. That's what I keep saying to kind of help get through the next few months, I suppose. So let's talk about Chatter. Well, as soon as I saw the cover, I was like, this is a book for me. And as soon as I read the first few pages, like I said at the beginning, just your way of articulating things just really strikes a chord with the everyday person who isn't in your field of work. I suppose I would love to ask you, what is chatter and how would you define it?
Well, so when we experience negative events, we tend to turn our attention inward to make sense of those experiences, to make meaning out of them, to problem solve. And sometimes that works, but more often than not, our attempts to make meaning and problem solve backfire. They lead us to ruminate, to worry, to catastrophize. Which in my mind, I use the term chatter as a phrase to capture. So chatter refers to the cycle of negative thoughts and feelings that really take introspection, and which is this tool we have, right? To turn our attention inward and make sense of our lives. Chatter takes introspection and turns it into a curse rather than a blessing. And so it's those negative thought loops that really lead us to feel stuck and then have negative consequences for our lives, right? Like these negative thought loops make it really hard for us to focus at work. They can create friction in our relationships and they can undermine our physical health. And so that's what chatter is.
Like what I've read, you described the brain, and I've talked a lot about it in terms of anxiety on this podcast about how, you know, so much of the anxiety we experience is happening without the knowledge of our prefrontal cortex or that executive functioning part of the brain. Would you say chatter happens almost entirely automatically?
Well, no, I think there's an automatic and a control component. I think oftentimes, so we experience chatter when we zoom in really narrowly on our problems to the exclusion of other ways of thinking about those experiences that might make us feel better or might diminish how significant those problems feel. So, you know, take the pandemic for an example. I think a lot of people are experiencing a lot of chatter around it when they're narrowly focused on just how awful the situation is, which, to be clear, it is very awful. So it would make sense that when we're zeroed in on that distress, we're going to feel bad. Whether that's automatic or not, I mean, we reflexively focus on the problem, but we can then also like continue to try to work through our feelings, consciously try to work through it, but not get anywhere. Kind of like one of those hamsters on an exercise wheel that's running, 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 and not making any progress. So, you know, I don't think it's only automatic. I think there is a controlled component to this as well. And I think part of the real problem is that many of us doggedly think we can work through the experience by just trying harder and harder and harder to do so. And that often just makes us worry even more.
Oh, like I've just experienced that so much firsthand where, you know, I suppose before I had any real awareness about anxiety and how it works in the brain, you think just kind of snap yourself out of it, or just you think you can think your way out of it, or that it's enough to acknowledge and know that you're anxious that you should be able to think your way out of it. And there's a huge difference between thinking and feeling. Would you agree?
Well, I think there's a big difference between different ways of thinking about it, you know. And so just trying to muscle through it often isn't very effective. Instead, what we find is really useful for changing the chatter is shifting our perspectives, right? So if we're narrowly zoomed in on the problem through chatter, what we often want to do is figure out ways to break us out of that narrow point of view. And there are lots of tools that exist to help people do it, many of which I talk about in my book. So, you know, the difference between thinking and feeling are often linked together very tightly. And what you want to do is, if there's a pattern of thinking that's leading to chatter, you want to change that pattern of thinking to reach more desirable outcomes.
It's always really terrified me to learn or to know that we are what we think, because I guess if you struggle with anxiety, you want so much to get away from that. And it's terrifying to think that if you keep thinking anxiously, you're going to perpetuate more anxiety. It's very hard to like pop yourself out of that feedback loop. Is all chatter negative? Do you think is all chatter a problem?
Great question. And I also want to come back to the idea of that it's terrifying to think that your thinking makes you feel bad. So don't let me forget to come back to that. But let's start with chatter, and is it all bad? So one step above chatter is this voice we have in our head, this our ability to use language, to silently talk to ourselves, if you will, to use language to weigh in on life's problems. And you know, introspection, turning inward is a big part of that. I think our ability to introspect and to verbally weigh in on life is one of the great superpowers that human beings possess. Language and our ability to, you know, to think about our problems. I mean, this is something that helps us innovate and problem solve and create. You know, we're often trying to create stories that tell us who we are and that shape our identity. And the voice in your head helps you do that, right? The voice in your head can be really helpful if you're trying to figure out how to do something or plan. So if I have a big presentation that I have to give, I'll silently go over in my head what I'm going to say. I'll actually say it in my head. I'll then anticipate what the really obnoxious person in the audience is going to ask me, what question to try to make me look bad. And then I'll simulate how I'm going to respond, right? So that's all this voice in my head is helping me do that planning, simulation, and so forth. That's a really useful tool. It can also become, though, a very hazardous tool, one that leads to negative experiences like worry and anxiety and depression. And that's what chatter is. So I use the term chatter to describe the dark side of the inner voice. And so chatter, at least in the way I use it, is always bad, but that doesn't mean that the voice in your head is always bad. The voice in your head can be really good. And people often tell me they just want to silence the voice in their head and not have it. And I think that would be terrible. I would not wish on my worst enemy a life without a voice in their head.
I think that's what people are expecting when they sit down to meditate or be mindful, is that they can just turn that voice off entirely and have nothing there. And then, of course, that doesn't happen and you get frustrated and you've launched an attack on yourself, on your own chatter, and that's not going to help things.
Yeah, well, look, meditation and mindfulness, I think, can be, are useful. They've been shown to be. They're one tool. But what I, you know, I talk about in the book that we spend between a third and a half of our waking hours not living in the present.
That's crazy.
Right? A third to a half of our waking hours is spent floating away in the mind, reminiscing about the past or ruminating about the past, worrying about the future or fantasizing about the future. But we're not in the moment. But the thing is, just thinking about the past or future doesn't always have to be bad, right? Like I just hinted at. I mean, I love fantasizing about the future. Right now, I am thinking quite often about sitting on a beach with a piña colada that never empties out, and my kids, who are going to be perfectly behaved, playing in the sand. Of course, it's a fantasy. I'm allowed to make things up, but like that's a simulation that I'm deriving much pleasure from. Like, I don't want to lose sight of that. I don't want to give up that capacity. Likewise, when it comes to thinking about the past, I'll often reflect on the past, right? I'll savor my triumphs, those really cool things that happened. Thinking about that can bring me joy. I can also learn from my mistakes. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Let me see, why did I say that? So that I don't commit the same, you know, the same offense in the future. So, you know, I don't think it is practical to always be in the moment. There's some value that can come from recalibrating our attention and being present focused, for sure. But I think if the goal is to always be in the moment, you're working against the way the brain is constructed. And so my perspective is, rather than do that, rather than work against the machine, let's try to work with it to make it function more effectively. And that's really what the book is about. It's about how to harness this capacity to make it work for you rather than against you.
You wanted to circle back on the idea that, you know, you could think your way into a very negative space and how scary that can be for someone who is feeling a bit vulnerable to those kinds of thoughts. Or I remember when my anxiety was so bad a few years ago, just literally sitting there thinking about having a panic attack. And sure enough, I had one and I felt like a match was lit inside me and my whole body just felt flooded with fire. And I was like, oh my God, like nothing has changed in my environment. Nothing has happened. I'm sitting here, I'm safe. And that terrifies me. I felt like if that can happen, will I just lose my mind here? And I've done an awful lot of work to get back to the point where I can, like you say, like my whole goal is not to try and cure it. It's silly to try and get rid of a stress response. We all have it. But like you say, you know, work with yourself rather than against yourself. But I remember the fear I had at that time of the power of your own thoughts. And I remember obviously people saying, you know, well, if they're so powerful, you can think positively and it'll be, you know, powerful in a positive way. But if you're feeling vulnerable, it is quite scary, isn't it?
Well, before I answer that, well, yes, big yes. And so I'll just answer that. But I was just going to say, you know, your description of that really terrible experience you had was so poetic. It's not surprising to me that you're such a good writer. You know, I really love the way you described it with the match burning inside. Yes. Yeah, look, experiencing panic and worry and rumination, depression, these are not pleasant states. Sometimes people ask me, well, how do you know if you're experiencing chatter? Well, I say usually you know it. You don't have to ask, right? These are terribly unpleasant states. Now, I do think it's important for people to know. You mentioned that this is a stress response you don't want to get rid of. I want to emphasize that for a moment, because we often hear that the goal should be living a life free of negativity, just positivity.
No, I don't.
This is
agree.
Another one of those things. I could not agree more. Negative emotions in small doses are elegantly adaptive. They serve a vital function, right? Emotion, we've evolved the capacity to experience anxiety and sadness and anger and other negative states for a reason. They help us. When I experience a ping of anxiety before having to give a big talk, or when I know a deadline is approaching, that's really useful, right? The discomfort I feel motivates me to do work and make sure I'm properly prepared so I don't make a fool out of myself. If you didn't have that capacity, you'd probably get into trouble. And there's actually a great case study on this. There are people who there's a genetic condition where people are born every year without the ability to experience physical pain. It's a genetic disorder. And what happens to these people, and physical pain being a negative state, these people end up for the most part, dying young, right? They don't, when they put their hand on the stove, they don't know to pull their hand away. When they start scratching a mosquito bite, they don't know to stop at a certain point, right? So they end up developing open wounds and infections. So negativity is not what we want to avoid. Instead, what I think we want to figure out how to manage is when the negativity morphs, takes on a life of its own, and morphs into chatter, panic, perseverative cognition, technical term, sorry, occupational hazard. Sometimes I slip back.
I love
into
it. I'm going to look it up after.
the jargon mode. Here's one way to think about chatter and why I actually use the term. So worry and anxiety tends to involve negative thinking about the future, perseverative, like you're perseverating over and over and over again. Depressive rumination is about the past in general. And so what chatter really captures is this process of overthinking things, regardless of whether it's about the past or the future. But the challenge is that that's what we want to figure out how to harness. And just to go back to your point before about the thoughts controlling us, one, I think, empowering idea that doesn't just come out of my book, but also lots of other work. And it's an idea that's been around for a while, but it's an idea that I don't think everyone knows about, is that our thoughts don't have to determine how we feel. That is, our thoughts aren't our destiny. We have the ability to control our thoughts. Lots of studies show this. And I think just recognizing that is the first step to bringing about change. Like when my daughters get really upset about something, you know, they're young, they don't actually know that they don't they have a choice, that there are things they could do to feel differently. And what I've found working with my own daughter, just talking to them, not as a scientist or a therapist, just as a dad, I'm not a therapist, I'm a scientist, just for people who are listening. Just getting them to understand that there are different ways that they can think about the situation. And depending on how they choose to think about it, that can have implications for how they feel. I think that's a powerful idea.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you about an experience that I observed with myself and my own chatter, and that I guess it's kind of the question is like a chicken egg situation, with chatter leading to anxiety and anxiety leading to chatter. Back a couple of years ago, I started to notice this pattern. I would describe it as like a wave of anxiety. Back in 2014, I had what I now describe as like a bit of a breakdown. My anxiety got so bad. I was suffering several panic attacks a day. I didn't leave the house for a few months and it was just absolutely awful. And I was just at home alone in the four walls of my own brain, and it was just not nice at all, and I really thought I lost myself. But what I noticed was that when I was in an anxious wave, it was like all of my thoughts were tinged with fear. So looking ahead to something maybe 10 months down the line was a terrifying prospect for me. It was like I had anxious goggles on, like everything was through that lens of anxiety. So no matter what was going on, I was going to perceive everything as a little bit more frightening, or me not being able, or, you know, oh, I wouldn't be able to deal with that. So that was when I was like, obviously, you know, there's a lot of cortisol in my body, my hormones were all over the place. And after like a couple of days, when that would settle down and I find that equilibrium again, and nothing had necessarily changed, but I noticed that then I could think about the same events again in the future and have a completely different approach to them or feel differently about it. So I started to realize that when I'm in an anxious wave, don't trust any of your chatter, even though I wouldn't have used that word, because you're going to feel differently about it in a couple of days' time when things settle, and you know that you always do come out of it. Do you think that being in an anxious state where maybe it's not because of your thoughts, maybe something has happened, maybe you've gotten a fright, can stimulate a vulnerability towards anxious thoughts, or anxious thoughts leading to that anxiety? Do you find it's a case of both?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're activating when you're experiencing these states, you're activating what we might call in technical terms, a schema, a way of viewing the world through a pair of glasses that has a tint to them. And in your case, as in the case of many people who are being anxious, it's a tint. It's the anxious tint, you know, coming soon to a sunglasses store near you, right? So you're viewing the lens through the danger. There's a lot of research which shows that when we're in a threat state, we are more likely to be vigilant for threats in our environment. So you're more on guard, and that can perpetuate these kinds of negative responses. But you interestingly, you know, you did something. You described doing something to break out of that state, which I talk about in the book. So when people are experiencing chatter, they're very zoomed in on the problem, and they can't often find, they're losing that broader perspective that often has the potential to provide us with different ways of thinking about the experience that can make us feel better. And one way to get that broader perspective is to step back and get some space from our experience. And you did it by doing something we would call temporal distancing, or you might think of it as mental time travel. You basically thought, you reminded yourself, well, how am I going to feel about this a couple of days from now or a week from now? I've experienced anxiety before, and guess what? It's passed before. And that's what temporal distancing does. So if you take something that you're experiencing chatter about, and you imagine how you're going to feel sometime in the future after that stressor ends, what engaging in that little mental time travel exercise does is it makes it clear that whatever you're going through right now, as awful as it is, it's temporary. It will eventually pass. And when people have that understanding, that gives them something incredibly important. It's called hope. And we know from decades of research that having that hope can be a powerful bomb for our chatter, for healing our chatter. So this is actually something that I do when it comes to coping with the pandemic and the misery surrounding it. I rely on a few different tools that I talk about in chatter, chatter the book, that is. It's hard when we're talking about a concept and the name of the book is the same thing. It can get confusing. But I'll do the mental time travel. You know, I'll think about how I'm going to feel in the future once this ends. And that gives me hope. I also think about the past. And that's another way of working with the mind to help address chatter. I think, well, you know, we've actually experienced pandemics before, like back in 1918. And guess what? We got through it. And we were arguably worse off back then than we are now in terms of technology and where we stood, but we managed to survive. So we're survivors too. So that's just one tool that people can use to broaden their perspective in ways that can be helpful for managing chatter.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Amazing. I would love to ask you about some more tools in just a minute, but obviously chatter is not something we want to switch off. We definitely don't want to switch it off. We don't want to not have it. Same way, stress and anxiety is something that's going to be in our lives. You know, unless you're going to live like a monk up the Himalayas, you're going to come up against roadblocks and tension and stuff. And something that has really helped me is to realize that it's not the presence of anxiety or stress in our bodies that matters as much as how we perceive that stress and anxiety. So like you said at the beginning, reframing how you look at it and thinking, okay, well, my body is trying to tell me here, look, maybe you're taking on too much. Maybe this isn't a great situation for you to be in. And I'm wondering, is the crux of it really how you perceive your chatter?
So there is some work showing that you can actually changing the way you think about your stress response, your chatter, can be helpful. So that's one tool. It's not the only way of managing chatter. There are lots of different ways of reframing the situation. Some work similar, but some work different. And I go into all these differences in the book. It's hard to reduce it to one.
There's loads of ways you can approach it.
But we don't need to. And that's I think, the cool thing is that, you know, I think I talk about 20-something different science-based tools in this book. And really the science around them and how they play out in people's lives. And you know, one of the themes is that different tools work for different people in different situations. And I think the challenge that many readers will face, and I mean challenge in a good way, not a bad way, is to try to figure out what are the tools that work best for them, given their unique situations as they navigate life. Now, to go back to what you were saying about how you perceive your chatter, there's some really wonderful research which shows that when you get a person to think about their stress response as signs that of a is a challenge. So, all right, I have to give a presentation. My palms are sweaty. My heart's racing. One interpretation of those symptoms is like, oh crap, I'm having a panic attack. I'm having threat. And that kind of interpretation makes it just worse. Like then you start spinning and it aggravates the chatter. But what this research shows is that another way of interpreting that situation is to say, oh, this is my body rising to the occasion. When I'm in a state of challenge, when something that is required of me, right, that really requires that I extend myself, my heart's going to beat faster. And that's not a bad thing. It's just my body mobilizing itself to deal with the situation at hand. And so it turns out when people appraise their these stressful circumstances as a challenge rather than a threat. They think about it as something they can handle rather than something they can't handle. That can have really positive benefits for their subsequent performance and how they feel.
Absolutely. And it also helps me in those moments of anxiety to know that it is very temporary. And it's when it's performance related, you know, it's going to rise and it's going to fall. Like, you're not going to feel that way when you're done, which I find is it's more acute in that you'll have the sweaty palms, the racing heart, but it will pass, which I find just it's great to know that. Maybe we could do this as an experiment. If I talk you through like a common issue I have with chatter, and maybe we could then apply some of your tools to it, or like hypothetically what you might do.
Sure.
So this is something that I have a lot. And I think actually in the pandemic, it's even worse because we're not in person with people. So we don't have body language or social cues to know. But I am guilty of personalization to the extent that if someone sends me an email that isn't really warm and friendly with exclamation marks and smiley faces, I will always jump to the conclusion that, oh, they're annoyed at me, I've done something wrong, they don't like me, they're mad at me. Or, you know, if a friend sends me a really short WhatsApp back, and I know that's just some people's style of communication, some people just are busy and they just send something back. So what that event leads me to is this chatter of thinking, is there something I've done wrong? Are they just fed up with me now? Did they see me say something on social media that they didn't like? And then it always comes back to the point of, no, Caroline, you are so lost up your own ass here, and they are just busy with their own day, and you know, they don't have enough time to devote to thinking and worrying about you. And it's such a nuisance of a chatter. So it's something that comes up again and again, and I know it's common to a lot of my listeners, and it is a common mind trap of anxiety that I explored in my first book. So that kind of idea of personalization and making it about you. What kind of tools would you apply there to that chatter? How would you kind of turn that around?
Well, first of all, I have to apologize in case I did not give you the smiley faces and hearts and exclamation points when we corresponded. I'm feeling very self-conscious right now. So
no, that's
I do apologize
just me.
That.
That's my problem, not anyone else's problem.
But you actually gave the answer yourself. So listening to you talk was really instructive. At one point, you know, you described this experience and how it instigated chatter. And then you said, but then I say to myself, all right, Caroline, well, here's the deal. We shouldn't be, this is just your tendency to personalize. You actually just did right then and there one of the things that we talk about, or that I talk about as being effective in the book. It's called distant self-talk. We know that we are much better at giving advice to other people than we are taking that advice ourselves. This is a truism, right? If a friend comes to you with a problem, that they're spinning over, they're experiencing chatter, most people report it being much easier to, it's easy for them to coach that person through the problem, right? That their friend can't get to the bottom of themselves because the problem's not happening to them. And what we've learned is that there are tools that people can use to essentially think about themselves like they were someone else, right? To think about their experiences from a distance. And that when we use those tools, it can make us more objective in ways that are helpful. And so one tool involves language, and it's called distant self-talk. And it's exactly what you did. It involves using our own name to coach ourselves through a problem, like we were talking to someone else. So, you know, I'll experience chatter blips every now and again, just like the best of us. And when that happens, all right, Ethan, come on, you're being ridiculous. What, you know, and that ability to talk to myself like I'm talking to one of my best friends, that can often break us out of this chatter. And you did it, which is what I find so fascinating. The Hollywood actress Jennifer Lawrence is one of my favorite interviews or examples of this. She was doing an interview with the New York Times, and the reporter was asking her questions that were getting hard, you know, or hard-hitting questions, and they're personal. And at one point she stops and she says, okay, get a hold of yourself, Jennifer. This is not therapy. So many people reflexively do this, I think, without knowing it. And what the science has gone on to do is illuminate how this works and how this distant self-talk functions as a tool that we can often use to our betterment.
And do you think that distant self-talking is effective? Or part of why it's effective, maybe because you create the space where you can bring in compassion, which we tend not to apply to ourselves, but we do towards other people?
I think that's one way. I think one of the reasons why distant self-talk works is it allows us to step back. And when we step back, we have more mental clarity that allows us to view the situation more objectively. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's useful. I do think it's also the case, though I don't know the data, this is intuitively, I don't know data that speaks to this, but intuitively, I do think that we often, it's easier for us to be harsher with ourselves than it is to be harsh with our best friends, right? So God, I should not submit to any other human being. Sometimes the things I say to myself, right? I'm not telling you what sometimes I say to myself after I screw up. We can often be quite harsh with ourselves, and we don't do that with others. And what's neat about distant self-talk is language in that case is it's almost like a psychological jujitsu technique. It's getting us to think about ourselves like we're another person. And when we assume that perspective or that role, then we start talking to ourselves more like we would talk to someone else. And with that comes, I think, more politeness like you're describing. That's an intuition. I don't know data that supports that, but I think it's certainly plausible.
I don't have any data supporting any of the things that I think. I just say, well, this is what's worked for me and this is what I've noticed with myself.
My chatter comes from not being able to talk about data. So if you averaged us out, we'd be a good pair.
Yes, definitely. Well, I need a bit more data and you maybe need a bit less.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say that the tools that you use to harness your chatter would fall under the umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapy?
Well, some tools are common to CT, but not all. So I would say that the similarity with cognitive therapy is that I very much endorse the idea that your cognitions can change the way you feel, but the specific tools that I review in chatter don't always pop up in CT manuals or therapeutic interventions. CT tends to rely on things like disputing, negative dysfunctional thoughts and other exercises like that. I don't know that it involves the kind of distant self-talk that we just talked about or some of the environmental tools that I go into in the book.
So talk me through some of the tools. Like, do you have a favorite one or two that you turn to yourself?
Well, I do. I tend to use distant self-talk that we just talked about. I also use the temporal distancing, which is, mental time travel, thinking about how I'm going to feel about something that's bothering me in the future, or recognizing, like, going back in time and realizing I've gotten through similar things in the past. One of the things I talk about in the book is about how other people can be either amazingly helpful or harmful when it comes to our chatter, even our most well-intentioned others. Depending on who we talk to and how we talk to them, those conversations can help or harm us. And so I'm really, really careful about who I approach for help when it comes to my chatter. I have like a board of advisors, so to speak, of, like three or four people I approach when it comes to work-related chatter, and then different people that I approach when it's chatter in my personal life. So I rely on my social network. But importantly, I don't just talk haphazardly to people. Like, there's some people in my life who I love very much and who I know love me, and I don't talk to them about my chatter because I don't think they're going to help me work through it very well.
Would you say that in harnessing your chatter, or at least calming it down or taking you out of a negative chatter, do you find that it helps to bring other people into it? I suppose you have tools that you can apply yourself, and then you have tools that you apply with other people.
Yeah, so I organize the tools into, like, there are three categories. There are things you could do on your own. Then there are another category or bucket of tools consists of ways of interacting with other people to harness your chatter. And there are a few different things that are relevant there. And then there are ways of navigating your physical spaces and your environment that can also help with our chatter from the outside in. And so one example there is actually creating order in our environment. Oftentimes when we experience chatter, we feel like we don't have control of our mind. Our thoughts feel out of control and disordered. And what we've learned is that people can compensate for that experience by trying to create order around them. And so you'll often, there's a great example of Rafael Nadal, the famous tennis player, for example, saying that the hardest thing he battles to do on the tennis court is control the voices in his head. And the way he does so is by performing structured rituals before and during each match. And those rituals consist of very structured sequences of behavior that he does the same way every time. They're very ordered. And that's one example of how you can leverage your physical spaces.
I think Michael Phelps does the same.
Yeah, a lot of athletes engage in these kinds of rituals. You know, I'm not the most orderly guy. But interestingly, when I was writing this book, I found that I would often, when I was experiencing a moment of chatter, paragraphs that wouldn't come out just right, or a looming deadline, I'd find myself walking to the kitchen and scrubbing down all the pots and pans and then nicely putting them away. Incredibly out of character for me, but I did it spontaneously and it helped. And it also improved my relationship because my wife was much happier. So that's one example of a tool that people can use. So here's the neat thing, and what really gets me so excited about the science is this idea that tools exist all around us, inside us, in our relationships, and in the world. And what I try, and I think some of us use some of those tools without even knowing it, right? Like, there are studies which show that when people experience chatter, many people spontaneously start cleaning around them, right? Or as you just did before, Caroline, like, you talked to yourself using your own name. I don't think you were probably aware of doing it. You just did it, right? And so what's neat is that what scientists have done is they've identified these tools and then carefully specified how they work so that you can ID them. And now, you know, if someone, you know, reads about them, okay, this is a tool and here's how I can take control of it. So those are the space of the tools. Those are the three categories and lots of tools in each one.
I think a lot of people listening will want to probably get in control of their chatter, but is there anything to be said for letting your chatter, giving it the chance or the opportunity to really run wild and go to the furthest, you know, ends of the earth it wants to go to, in terms of coming up with creative ideas? And it sounds counterproductive, but sometimes even when it comes to my worries, just letting them, you know, work themselves out and chat away and you know, come up with all these terrible things that could go wrong, sometimes that helps me to, I suppose, like you said, when you're talking about giving a speech, you know, to confront the worst possible case scenario helps you to prepare in that event. So do you think we should, you know, allow our chatter the opportunity to go free sometimes?
Well, you know, I don't talk about this in the book, but one technique that's often espoused is to, like, give yourself some time each day, right? If you're trying to, like, systematically work through your chatter and reduce it, and you don't want it coloring every part of your day, set aside a certain amount of time to just let it go free. I haven't done that personally. I haven't studied that, but that's one thing that you often hear spoken about. One experience that I've had is sometimes just saying what's worrying you out loud. In some cases, it's so ridiculous that once you articulate it, you realize, oh, I'm really being objective. It's almost like articulating this makes you realize how far away you're slipping. And I think that can be useful. And so sometimes, I mean, I found that on a personal level to be a useful tool. Just trying to, you know, I mean, the mind is capable of all sorts of gymnastics. I'm sure you've experienced, right? Like, the things that we could think about are sometimes really far removed from reality. And what's interesting about when the experience of chatter is we lose touch with that, right? We're losing the perspective to know that what we're thinking about is so unrealistic that it doesn't pay to worry about. And I think that's where the opportunity lies to help ourselves, which is to try to regain that perspective. And so I spent a lot of time talking about ways people can do that in the book.
What were you most surprised to learn about chatter in, not just when it comes to yourself, but in all the research and the work that you've done and looking at all these studies? Was there anything that really stuck out at you?
I continue to be fascinated by the power of language to help us harness chatter. The idea that these small linguistic shifts, like thinking about my problems using my own name rather than I, can have implications for how I think, feel, and behave. I think that's really, really interesting, as is the fact that many people spontaneously do this without even knowing it. So, and there are records of that throughout history, Julius Caesar, Henry Adams, and many contemporary figures too. So that was really interesting, but probably, you know, I talk a bit about lucky charms and superstitions and how simply believing that you're gonna feel better can often have that effect. And that to me remains just a mind-blowing set of research findings. I titled that chapter of the book Mind Magic, it's magical in a, not in a supernatural sense, but just in a kid in the candy store, hard for me to believe that me giving you a sugar pill, a pill that has nothing in it. And if I tell you, Caroline, that take this every day, you'll feel better. And if you believe me, it has that effect. For, not for every kind of condition, but certainly for mild and moderate forms of chatter. There's a lot of data suggesting that if you can get a person to believe that they're going to feel better, they often do. And what that tells me is that the power of the potential of the human mind to heal itself is quite incredible, but we often don't have the ability to harness that power. It's almost like we have to be tricked into believing that we can heal ourselves. And so that to me is just a fascinating idea.
If we do manage to harness our chatter, what can we expect? How will it improve our experience?
Well, you know, there are three core domains that chatter undermines us. It makes it hard to focus at work and on the ball field and at school. So it can interfere with our ability to think well and perform well. It can also create friction in our social relationships, right? When we're experiencing chatter, we often want to talk about it with others. And we talk about it, and then we keep talking about it, and we keep talking about it. And that can have the unfortunate consequence of sometimes pushing away those we love and those who love us. And then finally, chatter can undermine our physical health, because what our chatter does essentially is it helps us create and maintain a stress response over time. So we experience something negative, but then we constantly reactivate that negative experience by thinking about it over and over, which leads it to remain active in our head in ways that can get under our skin and contribute to physical disease, things like cardiovascular disease and certain forms of cancer and other physical ailments. And so basically, if you reduce the chatter, all of those other areas of your life improve. That's the idea. So I think the stakes here are quite high, but so is the potential for people to manage this condition effectively. So for those people who experience chatter from time to time, which I would argue is almost all of us, the good news is that there are things you can do to manage it. And of course, if it gets truly extreme and eventually gets into the territory of what we might call mental illness, clinical levels of anxiety, depression, that's a situation where I would advocate seeing a mental health professional to help with that, because the kinds of interventions that you're going to get there are going to be a lot more intensive and will help you get back on track more quickly.
And do you think that chatter is something we should be mindful of? You know, even when our chatter is good, should we be aware of managing it and harnessing it? Or is it something that you think we only tend to look to address when it's a problem?
In my head, I think of chatter as not good. And so when we're having the chatter, we should try to manage it. But again, the managing the chatter doesn't mean silencing the voice in your head. The managing the chatter means getting rid of those negative thought loops so that you can free up that voice in your head to do what it was to do what it does best, to help you problem solve, innovate, create, control yourself. So I think that's the challenge.
And before I let you go, I'm so grateful for your time, and I know you have to get back to your family and your work, but if there was one thing that you hope people would take away from this book, what would it be?
That chatter is incredibly common, but that tools exist, science-based tools exist, to help. And there's no single magic tool. Different tools work for different people in different situations. And the challenge is for you to figure out what are the combinations of tools that work best for you.
And would you say you've managed to harness your own chatter?
I'd say that I use these tools and they certainly help. Does that allow me to never experience chatter? No, I'm human. Preventing it from ever being triggered is something that is really challenging. But do I think I'm pretty good at it? Yeah.
Amazing. And we all will be when we finish reading your book. Ethan, thank you so much for making the time to chat to me. I'm just fascinated by the whole concept. And also, like you said there, I didn't even realize I was probably already engaging in some of the tools like temporal distancing. And to put a framework on it helps, I think, people even more, because they feel like they're proactively doing something about their anxiety as opposed to just kind of wallowing in it. There's so much to digest in this book. There's so many tools. I can't wait to put them into action myself. And yeah, massive congratulations, and hopefully we will see you on this side of the pond sometime in the near future to help with all of our chatter in real life.
Oh, I would love that. I look forward to that day, and thanks so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun chatting.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.